See, Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that loves undivided.
Yup. You either go to church or you're gonna go to hell. Get a job and work or you're gonna go to jail. I just kinda wish we didn't think like that. Why's it gotta be all white or all black? And when we gonna learn to try on someone's shoes sometimes?
That's right.
When we gonna start to see from someone else's eyes?
I think it's time to come together. You and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference. Make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody. We've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that we love. Undivided.
Welcome back. Oh, a circuitous route. We'll get back to FIDA and Hayek's mention of FIDA in The Road to Serfdom. And the socialist roots of Nazism, we keep circling back to that. You know, the planning, there is a central plan, there is a central planner. Even though it escapes most people's grasp, I think, that it sort of stands to reason. It goes without saying. I mean, are all of these plans that we hear about just a disorganized, chaotic, unconnected bunch of plans? Or is there more to the story, perhaps, especially when they seem to be acting in concert, you know? It's interesting. So, but before we do that, back to Jordan Peterson real quick. How to know someone is the opposite. Speaking of the monster within, here's the conclusion of, you know, Jordan Peterson talking about how to know someone is the opposite of what they say they are. Go ahead, please.
Socialism. Anyways. So the psychoanalysts are always telling you, look, you know, there you are, there's no monster. It's like, okay, where's the monster? Because it's somewhere. It's somewhere, because there's a monster in everyone. And if you're hiding it or covering it up or pretending that, you know, you only stand for the good, it's like, all that means is that you're ignorant and naive about your own possibility. There's a monster around there somewhere. So, yeah, and that's partly because, you know, if you're not a monster, it's pretty hard to stay alive. Because, you know, you have to contend with things like this. Sorry, things like this, and things like this, and things like this, and things like this. You know, that's your life. You contend with that. Nature is brutal. Culture is brutal. And other people can be brutal, too. And so if you're not prepared for that and able to withstand it, then you're just going to get rolled over. So you better get the old inner monster developed, because, and under conscious control, because even though it's a terrible thing, you need it.
So that's kind of interesting. I don't know. I would maybe temper that a little bit with what happens, you know, again, speaking of Pike's letter to Mazzini, what happens when we are being encouraged throughout the Freudian, Jungian, Nietzschean era to look within and reach within, and through the Marxist critical theory lens, what happens when we're encouraged to do that? And again, increasingly absent virtue, morality, and religion, what happens is, you know, basically we prove Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Samuel Adams, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, we prove all these, Patrick Henry, we prove all these guys right. Only virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters. We devolve into corruption and viciousness. So, yeah, nature is brutal, culture is brutal, people can be brutal. Sure, and so we have to decide for ourselves, you know, how we're going to navigate this. And we live in a society, if we can be honest, where, you know, speaking of how to know someone's the opposite of what they say they are, that is all around us. And the evidence of it is overwhelming in some cases. You know, I mean, some people think that Bill Gates is the closest thing to a saint we've seen in our lifetime. And there are others who believe quite the opposite based on a litany of facts. And where do we begin? You know, maybe we can table the discussion about facts, or, you know, the ostensible benefits of certain things that are imposed upon people who don't go looking for them. I'm not aware of, you know, India and Africa showing up, you know, boatloads of people from India and Africa showing up at the Gates Foundation, beating down their door saying, please send us boatloads, you know, shipments of vaccines so that we can be saved from whatever. So maybe we can table that, but and so John D. Rockefeller III, you know, as James Corbett pointed out in the Big Oil series, you know, him showing up in the streets of Dhaka, you know, oh, look at all these people. Well, that's the problem, isn't it? It's all these people. How do we get rid of them? So those people aren't showing up at the Gates Foundation, beating down the door, please send us these things. Not to my knowledge, anyway. So why are we really, you know, what is the real motive of your ostensible philanthropy? Is it perhaps somewhere around the area of what Gary Allen sort of elucidated in chapter 4 of the Rockefeller File, profit times philanthropy equals power. Anyway, we can table that discussion, but what about you know, what about things like that blog post, A Guide to Number Games? That's really strange. So lying and manipulation is virtuous? In what parallel universe? One chapter shows you how visuals can be used to exaggerate trends and give distorted comparisons. Why would you want to do that, Bill Gates? A Guide to Number Games, How to Lie with Statistics, is a great introduction to a crucial topic. This goes with Machiavelli's The Prince and Olinsky's Rules for Radicals and so on and so on. How to Lie with Statistics. Suddenly, lying is being cast as noble and virtuous, which it is not. But, you know, he has lots of power and influence and money, so he must be, it must be true. Come on, Chris. I mean, you're not a billionaire. Nope. And de Balzac's axiom, I think, is behind every great fortune, there's a crime. So, you know, we could look at certain examples like that. Anyway, to sort of round out this discussion and then to get to Hayek's Road to Serfdom as a prelude somewhat to, you know, the Independence Day celebrations and things. It's interesting, you know. The Northwest, the Pacific Northwest in particular, but the Northwest in America is hot. It's on fire. 114 degrees in place. It's the hottest place on earth, really. Hotter than Saudi Arabia. And now we're going to have Independence Day celebrations. What timing? You know, in certain places like in Montana, it was, I don't know, it was in the 40s just a couple of weeks ago. 2 or 3 weeks ago. Now suddenly it's 114 degrees. Enter Independence Day, what people refer to as the 4th of July. Independence Day and fireworks. Remember that fire in Oregon? Maybe I'll even look real fast. I've talked about this, you know. The IncyWeb entry mentioned fire that was allegedly started by young people with fireworks. Those darn young people with those fireworks. And then, guess what? As it turned out, not so much, right? There was the wildfire, what was it, 3 years ago, I want to say? And the initial reports were the kids with fireworks started one of the biggest wildfires in Oregon history. And then if you followed the story, as is not uncommon, actually it turned out it wasn't kids with fireworks. Well, what was it? Well, you know, and I've had this conversation with some people, one friend in particular, about how, you know, I mean, the Forest Service is an interesting thing these days. You know, sometimes, I mean, kind of like, it reminds me of George Carlin talking about, you know, United States DOD bombing brown people, and if you want to get bombed, just try to horn in on the action because they don't like the competition. No one bombs brown people but us. And so no one starts forest fires better than the Forest Service. And if you're trying to start a fire to prevent a larger fire, well, then you can expect to be persecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And I do mean persecuted. Just ask the Hammonds. But, you know, people have talked. I mean, for example, there are folks in Montana. You know, there is the fire district in particular between Libby, Montana, and Kalispell, Montana. And for a while now, I mean, I was actually at one of their meetings a few years ago. I want to say 3 or 4 years ago, something like that. And people are getting very suspicious of what's going on. There's been this influx of California influence from, you know, to these fire districts. And people are getting increasingly upset year after year seeing these folks come, you know. And what have we seen in California? I mean, I don't know. I don't understand what makes those folks so much better equipped to handle fire when in Montana, for example, the logging industry used to have things pretty well, I think, in hand. At least that's my assessment. But this California influence comes, and these are the people who can't seem to stop PG&E from lighting houses on fire, and PG&E says they have to shut down power to 600,000 homes so that they don't start more forest fires. That's, you know, the good reason. And this contingent comes to the, you know, northward to the northwest, and folks in Montana that I know are curious and skeptical, because year after year, what seems to be happening is the hills light up, and then these people sit back and say, we have to wait, we have to wait. We have to wait until what? And I've talked about that in the last few years. Anyway, it's a curious coincidence, these fires and such. We'll see what happens. Fireworks. I mean, if you want to start fires and have a plausibly deniable cover, here's a great time to do it. I expect, you know, that we'll see that. And if we chase the stories out on IncyWeb and places like that, it won't actually be young people with fireworks. It'll be something else. Wink, wink. Might be a sudden freak flash of lightning, as I've talked about in the past. You know, even the National Weather Service reports 20 to 40 or 45,000 flashes of lightning in like an hour. Is that really normal? That doesn't seem normal. That starts flash forest fires and wildfires in certain places. That seems strange. Maybe it's just me. I wonder what Nikola Tesla would have to say about that. We'll probably have to break this over a couple of segments, but I want to play this as a companion. How to Know Someone is the Opposite of What They Say They Are. This is the companion. Jordan Peterson, Stop Being a Pushover and Get Mentally Stronger. Go ahead, please.
The first thing you have to understand with regards to trying to come to terms with the conception of the shadow is to understand the idea of persona. And persona is the you that you present when you want people to accept and like you. Often like. Let's say that you go to a party and you're trying to impress the people that are there, and you're trying to get them to like you. And so you maybe get jabbed at a little bit and you laugh, and you know, you go along with everyone so that they like you. And then you go home and you're bitterly resentful about the way that you were put down at this party. And that's going to make all sorts of aggressive. I wish I could have said. It's going to make all sorts of aggressive and vengeful thoughts sort of flash through your imagination. Well, the first part of the problem is that you were too much persona, right? You sacrificed yourself in some sense at the party so that people would like you. And in the second part, you're refusing to admit to the existence of those elements of you that would have actually protected you from doing that. So let's say you go home and you're all bitter and resentful and you have fantasies of revenge. I mean, that reveals to you the shadow part of you that's aggressive. And the thing is, you actually need that, because if you would have integrated that more successfully into your personality, when you went to the party, you wouldn't have had to let people put you down to get them to like you. You know, instead of having a face like this, which says, I'll take anything that's coming my way, you know, you have a face and a stance that's more determined and assertive. And if you manifest that properly, people aren't going to mess with you to begin with. But, you know, you may have already adopted a morality that says, well, I have to be likable and I shouldn't do anything that causes any conflict and I shouldn't ever, you know, hurt anybody's feelings. And so you're just to present yourself as a punching bag, and you think that that makes you a good person, but it doesn't. And There's no integration of the shadow in that situation. So you see that at the end of the movie, you know, when I mentioned this, when Simba climbs up the rock to take control of it, all the female lionesses bare their teeth and he roars. It's like that aggressiveness is integrated into him. And so resentment is a really good emotion for making contact with the shadow side, because if you're resentful about something, it basically reveals two things. It either means that you're immature and you should stop whining and get on with things. You know, someone's asked, this often happens with adolescents who are asked, say, by their mother to clean up their room. They get all resentful about it. It's like, shut up and clean up your room. You know, it's not that much to ask. So that can be a gateway into the observation of your own immaturity. Or it's possible that you're resentful because people really have been poking at you too much and taking cheap shots at you and oppressing you. But what that means is that you've got some things to say that you haven't been willing to say or don't know how to say, right? You can't stand up for yourself properly. And in order to do that, you have to grow some teeth and be willing to use them. And again, that's something that might violate your morality, because you might say, well, I shouldn't be able to bite people. And the thing is, yes, you should be able to bite people hard. And if you're able to bite them, then generally you don't have to. But they need to know that you can, because otherwise, especially people who are badly socialized, they'll just keep encroaching on you and encroaching on you and encroaching on you and encroaching on you until you put up a wall. Like someone who's really well put together won't do that, you know, because they're sophisticated. But if you run into people who only have boundaries because other people impose them on them and you won't do it, you're going to be the bullied one in the office, for example. You're not going to get a raise. People aren't going to credit you with your own work. Other people are going to take credit for it. You know, and you're going to go home angry because you're doing your best and you're trying to get along with everyone and nothing ever goes your way. Well, it's because you're a pushover. And you think that's good because you confuse harmlessness with morality. It's bad. It's not right. Just because you can't do any damage doesn't mean you're moral. It just means you don't have the capability for mayhem. And that makes you a pushover. I mean, the Jungian stuff is very, very dark, you know. It's very dark. Because his notion of what constitutes a moral human being is much different from the typical view. He really thinks you get that horrible side of yourself integrated so it's up there where you can use it. Because otherwise, you're dangerous. You can't say no to people. And you'll go along with the crowd. And then if the crowd does something particularly pathological, which it's liable to do, you won't be able to resist it. You won't have the strength of character. And so then you'll fall prey to crowd pathology. And it'll be because you're too agreeable with a, you know, with a shadow resentful side that the crowd and its murderous intent is going to act out.
There you go. Man, oh man, is that happening? Is it me or is it happening? Is that being socially engineered? Again, like the Jack in the Box, you know, you take these people. It reminds me, I don't know, among other sort of analogous examples, there's Michael Douglas's performance in Falling Down. You know, this otherwise unassuming guy, except, you know, he works in the defense industry, so eh. But, you know, otherwise ordinary, unassuming, pencil-pushing technocrat says, you know, enough. Enough is enough. And then, you know, comes unglued, basically. But I think what we're seeing in America is, you know, that the antidote to this is virtue, morality, and religion. And the more that we instill that in ourselves, our posterity, our little, you know, community before that word was conscripted, you know, our little hamlets and townships and so forth, and out more broadly, the more that we instill that, the more kind and considerate we are, and the more that that is removed, the more selfish and vicious people become. And sociopathic, you know, oppressor-oppressed paradigm like Jordan Peterson was talking about, you know, that So what happens when we're encouraged to believe that sociopaths are a great, you know, I mean, they're the corporate darlings. They get ahead. You know, Kevin Dutton told us the wisdom of psychopaths, what saints, spies, and serial killers can teach us about success. And it seems that Bill Gates is one of them, often photographed with Daryl Huff's How to Lie with Statistics in Duper's Delight, it seems. And, you know, it's a curious thing. Bill Gates talking about the return on investments in vaccines. He declares that it's the decade of vaccines and then brags after the decade of vaccines that this was, you know, a $10 billion investment generated $200 billion in return. Brags about it openly in public. That's some hubris, man. That is some hubris. At Davos. Astounding. $10 billion. Bill Gates turns $10 billion into $200 billion worth of economic benefit. To whom? Pray tell. Then, of course, there was that little thing. Millions could die from bioterrorism. Or, you know, maybe it's on a computer screen. It's somebody, you know, said, Bill Gates said there was reasonable probability that terrorists could create a synthetic version of a virus that could feasibly kill millions. And he just seems like, I don't know, he has a fetish about this. Like, he really enjoys talking about it. Millions of people can die from genetic engineering to create some, you know, an epidemic. Highly deadly strain. Someone in a lab or from a computer screen. What? The next epidemic, he said, has a good chance of originating on a computer screen of a terrorist intent on using genetic engineering to create a synthetic version of the smallpox virus or a contagious, highly deadly strain of flu. So the point is, yeah. Really? And he's running around giving TED Talks all the time using visuals to exaggerate trends and give distorted comparisons. Why would he want to do that? So what happens in a society where we're encouraged to believe that this kind of thing is virtuous? I mean, this is how you get ahead. This is, these are the people, you know, this is what you do. This is the American dream, to be a psychopath like Bill Gates. Oh, I'm sorry, a saint. The closest thing to a saint that we've seen in our lifetime. What? Some people actually believe that. This is where we are in America. And again, I think the antidote is virtue, morality, and religion. Maybe it's just me. But to have a clear delineation between right and wrong, instead of the Hegelian dialectic, which Fitta actually, yeah, we'll get back to Fitta in a minute, I promise. The dialectical nonsense, to dispense with the dialectical nonsense and to go back to right and wrong and a didactic model of thinking, virtue, morality, and religion. Yes, this is right. No, that is wrong. We don't do these things. That's the antidote. Stick around. I'll be right back.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network.
Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Welcome back. We'll go to the phones in a second. First, you know, speaking of Jordan Peterson, he authored Maps of Meaning, obviously, which is, you know, based on his consumption of a variety of intellectual literature. And Maps of Meaning, you know, a lot of this has to do with trying to get a lay of the landscape, figuring out what's going on. This, you know, speaking of all of this, this little ditty sort of comes to mind, and I want to make sure that we mention this before I forget, you know. Salvatore Natoli: in our society, we unconsciously equate size with importance or even power. You know, speaking of Bill Gates. Anyway, this little clip from The West Wing, Season 2, Episode 16. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Sorry to be late.
Not a problem.
I'm CJ Craig.
Of course you are. I'm Dr. John Fallow, Dr. Cynthia Sales, and Professor Donald Huke.
Huke?
Huke.
Okay, and you are the Organization of Cartographers for Social Equality.
Well, we're from the OCSE. We have many members.
How many?
4,300 dues-paying members.
What are the dues?
$20 a year for the newsletter.
Let's start.
Wait, I want to see this.
This is Josh Lyman.
Indeed you are.
Josh, this is Dr. Fallow, and
hi.
This is Mary Men.
Yes.
Should we begin?
Yes. Plain and simple, we'd like President Bartlett to aggressively support legislation that would make it mandatory for every public school in America to teach geography using the Peters projection map instead of the traditional Mercator.
Give me $200 and it's done. Really?
No. Why are we changing maps?
Because, CJ, the Mercator projection has fostered European imperialist attitudes for centuries and created an ethnic bias against the Third World.
Really?
The German cartographer, Mercator, originally designed this map in 1569 as a navigational tool for European sailors.
The map enlarges areas at the poles to create straight lines of constant bearing or geographic direction.
So it makes it easier to cross an ocean.
But...
yes?
It distorts the relative size of nations and continents.
Are you saying the map is wrong?
Oh, dear, yes. Look at Greenland.
Okay.
Now look at Africa.
Okay.
The two land masses appear to be roughly the same size.
Yes.
Would it blow your mind if I told you that Africa is in reality 14 times larger?
Yes.
Here we have Europe drawn considerably larger than South America. When it's 6.9 million square miles, South America is almost double the size of Europe's 3.8 million.
Alaska appears three times as large as Mexico, when Mexico is larger by 0.1 million square miles.
Germany appears in the middle of the map when it's in the northernmost quarter of the Earth.
Wait. Relative size is one thing, but you're telling me that Germany isn't where we think it is?
Nothing is where you think it is.
Where is it?
I'm glad you asked. The Peters projection.
It has fidelity of axis.
Fidelity of position.
East-west lines are parallel and intersect north-south axes at right angles.
What the hell is that?
It's where you've been living this whole time. Should we continue?
Uh-huh.
And there you go. In our society, we unconsciously equate size with importance and even power. So, you know, and one of the things that's curious before I depart from this, one of the things I find most curious about this is even George Friedman's Stratfor is interested in this. And published Nick Routley's article, The Problem with Our Maps, back in June 2017 over at Stratfor. So, I don't know. I'll just leave all of that there. And we'll go to the phones. James in Vancouver, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Jordan Peterson. Yeah, Jordan Peterson is the kind of guy, because of people like him, people drop out of university and become billionaires.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I wonder if he's taken the shot yet, or the shots.
Yeah.
He. When I listen to his voice, it sounds to me like he's saying to people, "I want people to love me. I want people to love me." And what he does, it seems to me, is he projects his own problems on the rest of society.
Well, that's pretty. You know. pretty standard fare in the psychoanalysis world.
If you go to a party and you want people to like you, why the hell do I want people to like me? But it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, some of those fires now, I understand in California, you've got cars burning, but trees or things like that not burning beside them. Is that correct? Did I hear that right?
I have not seen that this time, but, you know, obviously we've seen that in the recent past.
Yeah. Okay, so then those are microwaves. Microwaves won't bother trees, but they'll sure bother metallic objects and houses with wiring in them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Nikola Tesla would definitely say something about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because yeah. This is what's going on. I think they're using some kinds of microwaves for this operation. And 911 was the same thing, where you had this massive structure of steel, okay, and not much was left except powder. And what it was it, to my mind, was high-frequency radiation literally sucked the electrons right out of all that steel. And then it will collapse and turn to powder. But anyway, well, okay. That's it. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah.
You bet. Thank you, James. Much appreciated, as always. Much appreciated. Tomorrow is, the beginning of the weekend for sure, beginning of the Independence Day celebration. And I will forego, you know, I've talked about that in the past and the whole, the history and so forth. So we'll do that tomorrow. And there was this guy, James Otis, you know, there's this other guy, John Adams, member of the Committee of Five. He was one of the five, and I guess Price's Law is right or something. You know, there was the one guy. So there was the Committee of Five. John Adams was one of those five guys. And John Adams was a guy who said, well, this guy, James Otis, he's the guy. It was his idea. And even wrote about it in a series of letters to William Tudor. Talked about that in the past. Maybe we'll talk about that. But today, so, you know, even Wikipedia tells us the Lee Resolution for Independence was passed by the Second Continental Congress on July 2nd with no opposing votes. The Committee of Five had drafted the Declaration to be ready when Congress voted on independence. John Adams, a leader in pushing for independence, had persuaded the committee to select Thomas Jefferson to compose the original draft of the document, which Congress edited to produce the final version. The declaration was a formal explanation of why Congress had voted to declare independence from Great Britain more than a year after the outbreak of the American Revolutionary War. But what was the issue? So, and why the fourth? Well, I don't want to get ahead, but Adams wrote, his wife Abigail's second day of July 1776 would be the most memorable epic in the history of America. Although Independence Day is actually celebrated on July 4, the date that the wording of the Declaration of Independence was approved. So, officially ratified, but actually passed on the 2nd. So, you know, and now, you know, Monday is the official day we're going to celebrate. It's interesting how all of this is, you know, the derangement of the Dadaist, you know, cultural nihilist bent, including, you know, the cultural Marxist bent. Anyway, to Hayek's Road to Serfdom. I said I would do this. I'm going to do this today. Chapter 12, The Socialist Roots of Nazism. It's so fascinating. You know, like Jordan Peterson talked about in one of the clips we played earlier today, you know, the socialist technocratic society seemed in vogue. And it's the problem people don't understand. Yeah, we all want free stuff. Sure, we want the Jetsons life of ease. But it's the planning, dear comrades, that always, you know, the nudge turns into the push, turns into the shove, turns into the gun barrel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, The Road to Serfdom, Chapter 12, The Socialist Roots of Nazism. Speaking of the Fidian, the Johann Gottlieb Fidda, the Fidian Society. Because even as Wikipedia even mentions, Fidda gets credit for the Hegelian dialectic, the thesis, antithesis, synthesis model. Hegel was not a Hegelian in this case, as it were. It is a common mistake to regard National Socialism as a mere revolt against reason, an irrational movement without intellectual background. If that were so, the movement would be much less dangerous than it is. But nothing could be further from the truth or more misleading. The doctrines of National Socialism are the culmination of a long evolution of thought, a process in which thinkers who have had great influence far beyond the confines of Germany have taken part. Whatever one may think of the premises from which they started, it cannot be denied that the men who produced the new doctrines were powerful writers who left the impress of their ideas on the whole of European thought. I don't necessarily agree with that assessment, but okay. I mean, the powerful, you know, writers part, beguiling is kind of what I would say. Their system was developed with ruthless consistency. Again, I would say, you know, if you haven't read Bakunin, maybe start there, and that's a good, you know. Once one accepts the premises from which it starts, there is no escape from its logic. It is simply collectivism freed from all traces of an individualist tradition, which might hamper its realization. Yeah, the individual is nothing, really. And it's a gateway scenario, you know, it's a gateway scenario, and the communitarian bent is evidence of it. You know, you can feel the abdication of the individual, speaking of abdication, in the communitarian bent. It is simply collectivism, freed from all traces of an individualist tradition, which might hamper its realization. Again, so the continuation of that is communitarianism, which basically is sort of an agglomeration of all of the worst efforts to this end. It's the, you know, all of these things are the worst pieces of all of the worst efforts, all agglomerated to produce this sort of tyranny and the absolute abdication and annihilation of the individual. Though in this development German thinkers have taken the lead, they were by no means alone. Thomas Carlyle and Houston Stuart Chamberlain, Auguste Comte and George Sorel are as much a part of that continuous development as any Germans. The development of this strand of thought within Germany had been well traced recently by R.D. Butler in his study of the roots of National Socialism. But although its persistence there through 150 years, in almost unchanged and ever-recurring form, which emerges from that study, is rather frightening, it is easy to exaggerate the importance these ideas had in Germany before 1914. They were only one strand, you know, 1914, interesting era, interesting what Norman Dodd said about pre and post 1914 to G. Edward Griffin. They were only one strand of thought among a people then perhaps more varied in its views than any other, and they were on the whole represented by a small minority and held in as great contempt by the majority of Germans as they were in other countries. But then I hear the echoes of what we heard Jordan Peterson say, right? How you need to grow a spine, stop being a pushover and get mentally stronger. Otherwise, what will happen? If you don't, and you start getting sucked into this crowd psychopathy, then if the crowd does something particularly pathological, which it's liable to do, especially when it's being socially engineered to do such, you won't be able to resist it. You won't have the strength of character. So then you'll fall prey to the crowd pathology because you're too agreeable and so on. No spine, not able to stand apart. When there is no individual, basically the individual is being gaslighted in communitarian fashion. You know, there is no individual apart from the collective, from the herd, from the village, from the community. There is no village without the individual, is the truth in reality. Stick around, we'll be right back.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly 1 million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
Welcome back. Final segment of today's pre-Independence Day broadcast. And Speaking of FITA, I'll do this, and I want to play one more clip before we go out. The connection, so again, Hayek's Road to Serfdom, Chapter 12, The Socialist Roots of Nazism. The connection between socialism and nationalism in Germany was close from the beginning. It is significant that the most important ancestors of National Socialism, the most important ancestors of National Socialism, FITA, Rodbertus, and LaSalle, are at the same time acknowledged fathers of socialism. Really? Because who acknowledges FITA as a father of socialism lately? While theoretical socialism in its Marxist form was directing the German labor movement, the authoritarian and nationalist element receded for a time into the background, but not for long. From 1914 forward, there's that date again, from 1914 onward, excuse me, there arose from the ranks of Marxist socialism one teacher after another who led not the conservatives and reactionaries, but the hardworking laborer and idealist youth into the National Socialist fold. And so now here in America, we've had the same folks doing the same thing at the highest levels of the hallowed halls of academia. And FITA is there, the guy that Bertrand Russell reminds us, laid it down that education, so-called, should aim at destroying free will. Methinks there's something afoot here. And on that note, let's go out with Sir Michael Caine reading If by Rudyard Kipling. Go ahead, please.
The Kipling poem is one of my favorites since I was a boy at school. My father read it to me once. And I think it to me as a little boy, it summed up what a man should be. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowances for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor look too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, if you can hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life for broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at the beginning, and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are done, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because